Greetings, 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 and welcome to another episode of Men Thrive. I'm so glad to have you with us. And if there was no other reason that I was glad to have you with us, this is our 29th and final episode this season. Man, who would have thought that we would launch a podcast in the middle of a pandemic, on the front end of a social revolution that was not about entertainment and not about social justice, and put us in a place where, you know, 29 episodes in, we have had some incredible conversations with some incredible brothers, all who met the mission of Men Thrive, which is to help brothers in a real way get glimpses of other men that are showing up whole and living with power and accepting this notion that at least in one place in my life, I'm going to thrive over survive. And in that mission, we've been able to talk to some brothers just about who they are, about what they do, about how they do it, about what they believe, about what they want to see. And in such a way that I have been so humbled by the brothers that we've brought through, because they've been open, they've been willing to be transparent, and they've trusted this show to do just that. And with that, one of the things that we also do on this show every single week is do all we can to make sure that we remind brothers how incredible they are. And so, listen, I think in a real way that, I mean, you know what? Maybe I don't think. I've been told on more than one occasion that my intros are pretty decent. And so I want to let you all in on some of our best intros of the season. Check these out. Keenan Beasley.
Yeah, I can't even talk after that. You gotta be I gotta just sit tight. I'm gonna listen to you. Whatever you say, I love it. I'm with this.
My brother, Marcos Palacios, also known as Cosign. What's up, man?
Man, come on, man. You brought me out, Jeff.
My man Jerry O. Johnson. What's up, bro?
What's up, Jeff, man? I really appreciate that intro.
Super excited to have Joel Daniels with me. Brother, what's up, man?
Man, brother, that was the best intro. I should have been recording that.
To my brother, Kenny Burns. What's up, man?
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was a hell of an intro. I need the first bit of that as I go on this next tour to introduce myself.
My brother, Lecrae. What's up, brother?
What's going on? Wow. That's a top five intros of all time, for sure.
It's so interesting it's interesting and painful at the same time, right? Because I think what it says is that we don't big up brothers enough. And so my introductions are never lies. I don't over exaggerate. I literally just attempt to be honest about how I see these brothers. And whether I know them or whether I'm meeting them for the first time is less the issue. It is, I think they're incredible. I want them to know they're incredible, why they're here. And as a result, we introduce them with all the fervor and enthusiasm that we can muster, because the world does everything they can with fervor and enthusiasm to rob us of our very humanity. And so, listen, I want to just list out some of my favorite moments this season. I'm just going to do about five of them. But I think the ones that I want to talk about, they may not have been your favorite episodes of the season or favorite moments of the season, and that's all right. Let me know what yours are. Hit me at men_thrive on IG and let me know what your favorite episode of the podcast was. Number one, without question, I have to say was Shaka Singor. And the reason I have to say was Shaka Singor, because this brother was willing to be our first guest. There was no Men Thrive podcast. We didn't have a model to send out. We didn't have a history of guests. He didn't know what this thing was going to look like. We didn't even know what it was going to look like. And he set a model for transparency, a model that has carried us through almost every single episode. Shot came through, man, and talked about his childhood and the fact that he felt like he was robbed of his childhood by so many people that were supposed to be protecting him, forcing him to be a man as a boy. And there were so many brothers that could relate to that. So many brothers that remember being told not to cry at 3 and 4 and 5 years old and being told to man up the better part of their childhood. And whether it was because of the community that they grew up in or the household that they grew up in, just didn't feel like they were able to be little boys. And the fact that that was the first episode, man, salute to you, Brother Shaka Singor, for just setting the foundation for a spirit of transparency that's rooted in strength, that is now the mantra for this show.
Being able to go back and look at that little boy, you know, something that really resonates, and you know, we have these conversations often, is how we don't just allow space for little boys to be little boys. You know, I was probably considered an adult by the time I was 11 years old. And what I realized on my journey through prison is that I had never given myself permission to just be a little boy. Mm-hmm. And all the brain science points to the development of our brain not reaching adulthood until we're 26.
Yep. And that's my man, Shock. And I will always be thankful for his willingness to be the first brother that blazed the trail for Men Thrive. Another brother that I thought came through at such an interesting time was Afion Crockett. And, you know, a lot of you may know Afion, some of you may not. My man just came out with an incredible special. So I recommend that at any point in time that you have the opportunity to check out my man Afion Crockett, whether it's on IG or whether it is recognizing that, yes, we continue to make all kinds of content. And my man Afion has done so with his special Mirror to Society. So I recommend that you check that out. But when he came through, it was really like the height of the shutdown orders, and Katz was in, and whether it was Versus that was providing all kind of entertainment in the midst of us not being able to leave the house. Afion, man, was one of the comedians that was really killing COVID in a way that others even didn't know how to or had not chosen to. And not only did he come through and share kind of his philosophical approach to the moment, where he was just like, look, you know, other people are chilling and I'm out here waking up excited every day about what I can do. He also came through and talked about the first time he identified a therapist, and specifically reached out to a therapist that was a Black woman, and he explained to us why. Listen to my brother Afion.
I've been in therapy for the last 2 years, and I love my therapist. She's a Black woman from DC, and she's like an auntie. She's like sitting across from one of my aunties. Because I didn't want to go to therapy and have to explain the Black experience too, so I wanted a Black person, male or female, right? Mm-hmm. So I got my therapist, and she just really helped me zero in on not beating myself up for things, on understanding that what I'm doing is enough and I'm good.
Brothers going to therapy is still an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the moment for you where you were like, you even needed this? Cause I even know quote unquote enlightened brothers that's like, yo, therapy is some dope shit, but I don't really need it.
I was him for a full decade. I was that guy.
And so my next moment, and I've got to, this was an impromptu thing, man. This was not scheduled to be a Men Thrive edition. But for a couple of weeks, my man Mark Lamont Hill and I just got together and got on IG and started riffing about whatever it was we wanted to talk about. And going live with my brother and business partner was incredible, I think, because it was therapeutic for both of us, especially in that moment. Again, we were in the midst of COVID. The stay-at-home orders were in place. People weren't traveling at all. And a lot of us were just having cabin fever and losing connectivity with people that gave us energy. And Mark and I were able to talk at a time where I think we both needed it. And because we trust each other, we're in a place that, shit, it was just two of us having a conversation as if nobody was there. And this might be one of my favorite episodes. Not necessarily because of any topic, but just how random it was that we had the conversation. And I think how many people responded to it.
And this idea that we as Black men, and certainly Black women, we just happen to be talking about Black men at this moment, but this idea that we are all worthy of good love, healthy choices, and second chances is how I have found my way to internal peace and joy, right? One, good love is both at the emotional and romantic level, right? We all deserve to be loved well. And you, and when you walk through the world, you meet a whole bunch, you can go to a meeting, you can have an interaction at the drive-thru. You know what I mean? You can talk to somebody on customer service. You be like, yo, you haven't been loved well. You can just tell that how they navigate the world, they haven't been loved well, you know? So part of it is figuring out that we're worthy of good love, that we deserve to be loved well. And to think about it at the personal level and the structural level.
And that's my brother, and he will always be my brother. I would also love to make sure that you check out Mark's book. It has not been out too long, and I know everybody's getting the President Obama book. I feel you. I get it. But if you have the opportunity to get We Still Here, Pandemic, Policing, Protest, and Possibility. Again, We Still Here, Pandemic, Policing, Protest, and Possibility by my brother Mark Lamont Hill. It's a dope read. I really recommend you pick it up. I promise you that you will enjoy it. And then there was an episode that was more recent, which was just a straight up just conversation with one of my boys. And that was with my brother, Don Calloway. And we talked about everything. I think it was probably one of the most diverse episodes that we've ever had, covering the most number of topics in the shortest amount of time. And so when you can go from cuddlingus to politics, maybe I guess that's not such a stretch. I mean, the bottom line is we talked about everything, and we talked about everything with a level of ease that I have come to find just incredibly humbling when you're able to feel safe enough with a brother that you could talk about whatever. And that it translates to a show in a way that we don't lose a beat. I so enjoyed having a candid conversation with my brother, Don. I know brothers who believe fundamentally that I am not married
until
we jump that fucking broom.
Yeah.
So you got cats that got Secret Service level security at the goddamn wedding because it's chicks they broke up with last week.
Yeah. There could be a moment, you know, if anybody has any reason in which, I mean.
Yeah, I ain't even talking about that though, man. I'm talking about the chick that's not invited.
Oh, no doubt.
Found out.
No doubt.
Found out.
But that, listen, to be clear, that day could be a disaster, whether it be at that question or at any time throughout the process of the weekend. That day
must
be a disaster if your house ain't.
No,
and you ain't been acting married for some time.
But that's my point. My point is that when I'm counseling younger brothers, I'm like, listen, when you propose,
shut it down.
You should be married. So ultimately, you don't propose to get you ready for marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
But because that's problematic on multiple levels. It's problematic by way of communication. It's problematic by way of expectation.
Right.
It's problematic by way of behavior. It's just problematic. And so,
but before you propose, you should have been in a monogamous relationship for some time. And I think that that's, you know, listen, if all the world's a stage and all the men and women, many characters, and they have their exits and their entrances, I certainly am not to be cast. Huh?
I said, all right, Idlewild.
Yeah, a little bit. No, that's, listen, if the world's a stage, I certainly am not the moral character in this play, but I have learned something along the way. And while I might not be a moralist, I try not to be dumb and F up in the same way twice, right?
And again, I mean, I just think that was a cool ass episode for me. I don't give a shit if y'all liked it or not. It was a great time, a great conversation. I'm gonna have to bring Don. Might have to be one of those reoccurring guests that we just bring back to have conversations. One, because he literally can talk about anything. And he's fearless. He just really is willing to have be super transparent about his own stuff, even as he's courageous as a professional and a man and a human. So I got to have Don back. So here, this last one was special for a couple of reasons. Shaka Zulu, I think, admitted that he'd never done a podcast before. And so this was the first podcast that he'd done. And this was the first episode that we went so long that we had a two-part episode. It wasn't even planned that way. We just went in. And anybody that knows Shock knows that he's just incredibly thoughtful and insightful, but has also had not only incredible experience and history within the music business, but just within our culture. And so I was humbled by his willingness to come on. And we're friends, but that doesn't mean that everybody who's your friend is going to come on and do an episode. I'm still humbled at all that he shared and just the selflessness with which he shared it. And so just want you to hear a little bit of that interview, and really recommend for all of these, but for this one in particular, that you go back and listen to it in its entirety. I mean, Shock just dropped gem after gem after gem after gem. And so listen, listen to it and tell me what you think. I mean, I'd love to get your feedback on all of these, but with Shaka Zulu's in particular, like I said, I really was compelled by all that he had to share. Take a listen.
I mean, the way I frame it when I have people ask me this question, I say, there's a difference between who I am and what I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can bring who I am to what I do, but what I do does not determine who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because people always like, they're like, your parents are, you what? They hear things and they're like, but I would have never known that. I would have never thought that. That's cool. Mm-hmm. This is a job, or this is something that I do. It's not who I am. And my thing coming up was like, my mom, I jokingly say, because my mother was in the music industry. And I always kind of, when I preface a story like this, I said, my mother was like the mother that was in Waterboy. Remember, and my mother was like, everything's the devil. Everything, foosball is the devil. And this is the devil. And this is the devil. So my mother, because she was in the music industry, moved around a lot of circles. And she would always tell a story. They'd be like, yeah. I remember she was like, you know, I sang better than Aretha and da da da, but you know, I just wasn't willing to, you know, be, you know, do this. I wasn't willing to go to drug parties and, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. Like, I would hear these stories and be like, oh, yeah. She would tell me like all these people she knew, but be like, yeah, but that person's on drugs. This person's sleeping with that person. You know, like all of these, you know,
horror story.
That this was negative. I was like, okay, cool. So I never wanted to be in the music industry. I was like, I got it. Okay, cool. But as I grew and I realized, oh, this is just a passion. This is like my life. It's who I am. I'm gifted in understanding music or whatever it is. And I love it.
And there it is. Those were five of my, not so much favorite moments, but just memorable moments of this season. And so, listen, before we get out of here and before we say goodbye and happy holidays and happy new year and happy Kwanzaa and all that good stuff, there was something else that happened during this first season of our show that I just thought was incredibly important. And that was the presence of Dave Chappelle. Dave has for a long time been my favorite comedian. But in this season, his courageousness, in my opinion, his fearlessness, his intuitive nature into where we were, I think just added value in a real way to a whole lot of us. And I know that he did me. And so I would love to leave out of here with something that he most recently did, where we just gave some insight to the business and what had happened to him, that I just thought was so gangsta, not even in its presentation, but in his transparency of his own business moment that we just don't often hear from celebrities. And so you all listen, I am so thankful for those of you that listen to all 29 episodes. I'm thankful to those of you that are new fans and listeners and are enjoying the podcast. That's what our goal is. I'm already excited about the Slater brothers that we're going to have coming back in the second season and some nuances to the show that we're going to add to hopefully put us in a place that the show is as entertaining and informative and as affirming to brothers, not in a way that we attempt to reduce accountability for black men. That's not what we want to do. But we do want to make sure we create a space where there's accountability without judgment. And that when iron sharpens iron, we do it because we want to build each other, not because we want to kill each other. And so I'm thankful for that. And I pray that I am in some way, shape, or form am able to be as fearless as I believe this brother is. So thank you, Men Thrive audience. And thank you for everybody that has been a part of this show. Thank you, Mo, our one and only producer who has started with me, made this show what it is, comes and works every day to make this happen. I'm so thankful for you, to my daughter, Madison, for helping on this show as well and just being a tremendous support in taking us from having no show to having a show. And to all of you, I just am so appreciative. And so, as I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Kwanzaa, as well as a Happy New Year, I say let us all kind of end out this 2020 year that has been so insane for a lot of us. And think for a moment about what we've been blessed with. Think for a moment about the relationships that we still have that were made stronger. Think for the clarity that we have in the midst of a whole lot of insecurity, and thankful that every single day we're able to wake up. That lets us know we have a chance to be better. And in being better, I hope that we can be courageous. And in being courageous, we can elevate a level of fearlessness that allows us to create tomorrow what doesn't exist today. Love y'all. This is my man, Dave Chappelle.
And I'm not up here trying to tell you guys that I believe that Comedy Central gave me a raw deal just because I'm black. I believe that they gave me a raw deal because this fucking industry is a monster. It's the same monster that these Me Too bitches was trying to tell you about. But they hate the monster for how it fucks. And I hate that monster for how it eats. But my God, man, it's the same monster. When I quit the show, all my friends would say, well, fuck them, Dave. Why don't you just do Chappelle's show at another network? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And why doesn't a slave run from one plantation to another plantation? Because the master over there might be nicer. My God, man, I was trapped. You know what? Tell you the truth. I've even thought about coming back and doing another Chappelle show. Well, but if I do, I can't call it Chappelle show because my name and likeness is being used by them in perpetuity throughout the universe. It's in the contract. You're not supposed to do this in my business. I'm up here doing something that nobody else in this business has the balls to do. I'm telling you something that you need to know. I'm trying to explain to you what you're seeing. You don't understand what you're seeing. I am publicly flogging a network. And I know that this network niggas, they watching me and they saying, why are you doing this? So publicly, doesn't feel good to be flogged publicly. Oh, believe me, I know. I know exactly how that feels. When I quit my show, they said I was crazy. What was crazy about it? I just didn't want to do it anymore. They said I smoked crack. That's impossible. I was a devout Muslim. I didn't smoke or drink. But I do now, bitch, because you ruined my fucking life. Now it's their turn. This is their first nigga lesson, and I'm honored to give it to them. They're gonna pay me for this show. I called my agent. I said, is there anything I can do about this show? And he said, no. Well, fuck you too then. If you want something done right, I guess you got to do it yourself. So I'm not going to the agents. I'm coming to my real boss. I'm coming to you. I'm begging you. If you ever liked me, if you ever think there was anything worthwhile about me, I'm begging you, please don't watch that show. I'm not asking to boycott any network. Boycott me. Boycott Chappelle's show. Do not watch it unless they pay me.
Yo, thanks for listening to Men Thrive. Did you like us? If you like us, visit your go-to podcast provider and check out other episodes. You can also go deeper by joining our community at menthrive.com. you're not. And yeah. And so from one brother to another, as we think about this whole notion of thriving, we only thrive because our tribe is thriving. And I'm so thankful that you are part of my tribe, brother.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
My man. Thank you, brother. All right. Peace. Yo, thanks for listening to Men Thrive. Did you like us? If you like us, visit your go-to podcast provider and check out other episodes. You can also go deeper by joining our community at menthrive.com.